Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a big show for you today as we head into the weekend, so let's get to the docket. First, a Dylan Rounds update, a Kristen Smart trial update, an update on that weird, creepy, scary Nevada case that we mentioned a few months ago. We have a video of what good cops are supposed to do for bad cops when they get out of hand. The Blue Lagoon honeymoon murder. That's right. The husband has been charged. Disney gone wild. Everybody keeping it classy down there. And then our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. You know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't, like the video if you do, leave me a comment below about what we discuss here today. Remember, if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us by downloading us on your favorite podcasting app, which includes Apple, Spotify, and Audible. All right, let's get to the docket. First, Dylan Rounds. It's been 2 months since Dylan Rounds disappeared from a remote farm near the Utah-Nevada border. But his mother says progress is being made in the investigation. Now, Rounds had been farming in the desert town of Lucen, Utah, and his grandmother spoke with him on May 28th, and nobody has heard from him since. There's been no signs around anywhere and no activity on his cell phone or bank accounts, according to his parents. Local law enforcement is the lead enforcement agency with the FBI assisting, but thus far, there have been no big breaks in the case. Now, quote, everybody thinks it's become this big stall, but there's a reason for that, said Candace Cooley, Round's mother. We're not out there searching and we're not having search parties, but there is stuff happening behind the scenes that can't be released to the public right now. As you may recall, at least two men believed to have interacted with Rounds in the days before he vanished have recently been arrested for felony gun crimes in Utah, but have not been charged in the connection with the disappearance of Dylan Rounds. Now, Chase Venstra and James Brenner are in custody, and Ms. Cooley believes they know what happened to her son. She says Brenner sometimes helped Rounds on his farm and was squatting on a nearby property. As for Venstra, she had never heard of him until her son went missing. Ms. Cooley goes on to say that Brenner has been listed as an official suspect, and on the affidavit that was served to get the warrant, they listed it as a homicide investigation. That's according to Ms. Cooley. Now, learning police are considering Rounds' disappearance was a homicide was somewhat of a relief to Ms. Cooley, she says, because now investigators have a specific focus. Cooley is trying to remain positive. Dylan Rounds' 20th birthday is coming up on August 1st. I guess we'll give Ms. Cooley the benefit of the doubt here. However, it would seem as though if it's a missing person slash homicide case, well, to prove any homicide case, it's a heck of a lot easier if you have the body. These two guys that are in custody seem like pretty cool characters. And I don't mean like cool you want to hang out with. I mean like they've been through this before and they're going to keep their mouth shut. And so they go do a little time on some gun cases, and that's it. I don't know. I think I'd still be looking, but that's just me. Let me know what you think in the comments. Now we'll talk about the Kristen Smart trial that began this week. Now the defendant, Paul Flores, and his dad are obviously on trial for the death of Kristen Smart. Now, Paul Flores, his defense attorney, a guy by the name of Robert Sanger, began his opening statement earlier in the week by claiming that there's no evidence what happened to her and that she engaged in at-risk behavior. A little victim shaming there, saying can't trust her. Well, both the father and the son have pled not guilty in the case, and there will be two juries deciding two different verdicts, one for Paul Flores and one for Ruben Flores. The trial is expected to last until October. Only in the state of California could a case last this long. I don't know if they're doing like half days, one day trials. I don't get it. Most homicide cases are 5 to 7 days at the most, even when it's a cold case. Well, On the first day of the trial, the San Luis Obispo County District Attorney, a guy by the name of Christopher Purell, told the court that evidence would be shown that would prove Paul Flores murdered Smart and that both he and Ruben Flores buried her under the Elder Flores' deck at their San Luis Obispo home. Now, while the entire community banded together to search for Kristen desperately, Paul and Ruben were apparently not joining in, the district attorney noted. It says, you will hear Ruben Flores would tear down missing posters of Kristen, tore down her smiling, beautiful face, called her a dirty little slut, all while her corpse was decomposing underneath his deck. Well, prosecutors say that Paul Flores killed the 19-year-old Kristen Smart during an attempted rape on May 25th of 1996 in his dorm room at Cal Poly while they were both first-year students. Now, the father, who's 81, allegedly helped bury the slain student behind his home in a nearby community in Arroyo Grande and later dug up the remains, moving them. Paul Flores has long been considered a suspect in the killing, but prosecutors only arrested him and his father in 2021 after the investigation was revived. Now, the San Luis Obispo sheriff, a guy by the name of Ian Parkinson, acknowledged missteps by detectives over the years, and he credited a popular podcast about Smart's disappearance called Your Own Backyard for helping unearth new information and inspiring witnesses to speak with investigators. Now, Smart's remains have never been found, and the mystery of how she vanished from the campus, tucked against a verdant coastal mountain range, is likely to be central to the trial. Now, behind latticework beneath the deck of his large house, on a dead-end street off of Tallyho Road, archaeologists working for police in March of 2021 found a soil disturbance about the size of a casket and the presence of human blood. That's what the prosecutor's theory suggests. The blood was too degraded to extract a DNA sample. While a blood expert said it was human blood, the test did not rule out the possibility that it was from a ferret or possibly an ape, though court records say no remains of such animals were found there, and neither was the human remains. Now, attorney James Murphy, who sued the father and son on behalf of Smart's parents, scoffed at the idea that it was anything other than human blood. The size and area in which the blood was found would make it a prehistoric ferret that would be in Jurassic Park, Murphy has described. When was the last time you drove down Tallyho Road in Aurora Grande and saw a primate? Now, the lawsuit that Murphy filed against Ruben Flores alleged that under cover of darkness, the father and an unnamed accomplice moved the body 4 days after investigators searched his house in February of 2020. Investigators didn't conduct their dig beneath the deck until more than a year later. Well, Monday, the prosecution laid out their evidence of the soil analysis from beneath the deck that shows the presence of the human blood and a recorded conversation between Paul Flores and his mother, Susan Flores. During the call, the mother tells her son he needed to tell her where they can punch holes in Your Own Backyard podcast because only you can. Now, the mother of the vanished college freshman, Kristen Smart, said her daughter fell victim to a spat of police failures in the wake of the disappearance from campus back in 1996. Denise Smart said local police and staff at the California Polytechnical State University had neglected to find Kristen, forcing the Smart family to spend the past 25 years searching for her. Now, taking the stand at her daughter's murder trial, a tearful Denise said, I felt like my daughter's life was of no value to anyone except her family. For the next 25 years, I did whatever I could, and I looked for answers wherever I could. Denise continued and said that she was contacted by the police shortly after Kristen failed to call home on Sunday, May 26. Kristen's cheerful call home was a weekly ritual, according to her mom. They didn't know that she had last been seen on May 24th. That day, Kristen sent her parents an excited voicemail claiming to have good news. They never found out what that good news was. Now, Denise had called the college president days earlier, but was redirected to a residential advisor who refused to give any information, claiming Kristen had certain privacy grounds. And a local San Luis Obispo Police Department sheriff told Denise he had no jurisdiction over anything that took place on the college campus. 4 days after her disappearance, police finally accepted a missing persons report. Denise showed the jury the last letter she wrote to her daughter dated May 5th, in which she warned Kristen not to be financially imprudent. She advised her daughter to get back on track, adding, "Buckle up, buttercup." Denise told the court, "I never would have thought it was my last letter to write to my daughter." The case will continue and continue and continue, since it will go all the way up until October, because nothing goes quickly in California. That almost sounds like the lyrics of a song or something, doesn't it? All right, next on the docket. Remember that weird case we talked about in Nevada where the lady disappeared from the Walmart parking lot and then was found raped and murdered? Well, we have an update. Now, the authorities there had alleged that a guy by the name of Troy Driver, who's 41, abducted the 18-year-old Naomi Iron from a Walmart parking lot in Fernley, Nevada, back in March before killing her and then burying her body. Prosecutors this week said the driver also kidnapped a teen at gunpoint to sexually assault her and then kill her. Now, the amended complaint accuses Mr. Driver of raping Iron between where she was taken and near a rural portion of the northern Churchill County. So now Mr. Driver is facing new charges of robbery with the use of a deadly weapon, burglary of a motor vehicle, illegal firearm possession, sexual assault, and destruction of evidence. As you may recall, Ms. Iron had stopped in the Walmart parking lot in the early morning hours of March 12th to take an employee bus to her job at an electronics factory. Security camera footage shows Ms. Driver getting into the driver's seat of her vehicle and then leaving the parking lot with Iron in the passenger seat. Authority later found Ms. Iron's remains on March 30th in a remote region of Churchill County. Richard Davies, Mr. Driver's lawyer, has said that his client continues to assert his innocence and would seek to move proceedings out of the county because the case has attracted significant public interest. Driver is scheduled to appear in court for a preliminary hearing on September 13th. Now, can't imagine why it would draw public interest when a young woman trying to do the right thing, going to her job early in the morning, basically gets kidnapped by a complete stranger, whereupon she is sexually assaulted and ultimately killed. Gee, I can't imagine why anyone would be interested in anything like that, and members of the community want to make sure that justice is in fact complete. I don't know. And the court will decide whether that is the appropriate jurisdiction for the trial to take place. We already know the crime was committed in that jurisdiction. Allegedly. Because we give everybody the presumption of innocence. Next on the docket, take a look at this video, all right? A Florida police sergeant seen on this body cam footage putting his hands on a female officer's throat last year was arrested on Thursday and charged with assault on a peace officer. Christopher Pulis was also charged with tampering with evidence, battery on a police officer, and assault. Now, Officer Pulis has been on administrative leave since the investigation began back in November of 2021. Yes, apparently when it comes to police investigations, it's like all governmental investigations. If it's one of them, it takes a long, long time. Well, the Sunrise Police Chief, Anthony Rosa, said officers were called to a convenience store that day for a suspect who had allegedly battered several people. Officers on the scene struggled to get the man into a patrol car, but eventually were able to subdue him and put him in the car. Once the subject was inside the patrol car, the sergeant approached and engaged in a verbal altercation with the suspect in a manner that, quote, "I feel was inappropriate, unprofessional," Rosa wrote in a statement. The supervisor escalated the encounter instead of de-escalating an emotionally charged situation. In the video, police is seen holding his can of pepper spray as he aggressively speaks with the suspect in the back of the police vehicle. At that point, a female officer became concerned with the situation's volatility and ran up to police, grabbed him by the belt, and pulled him away from the suspect and the police car. Police turns around, grabs the officer by the neck, and pushes her backwards. When he lets go, he returns to the patrol vehicle, slams the door, points and yells at the officer who pulled him away. Now, the Broward State Attorney's Office said police is accused of intentionally touching or striking the female police officer against her will, assaulting her by holding pepper spray up to her face, and assaulting the civilian male by holding pepper spray to his face. Now, if convicted, officer police would face a maximum possible penalties of up to 5 years in prison for the felony battery on a law enforcement officer, 1 year for assaulting a law enforcement officer, and 60 days for assault on a civilian. The district attorneys added that police is also accused of tampering with evidence, in particular his cell phone, back in January, and faces another 5 years if convicted on that particular count. But this is a good example of what good police officers are supposed to do. They're supposed to make sure the other police officers don't get carried away. They're supposed to do and say, hey, stop, this isn't right. You know, imagine if somebody had done that in the George Floyd matter, right? There's a lot of people that were on their first days of their job, they're going to prison. And this officer did the right thing. In most states, it's a law that requires other police officers to report police officers' misconduct. And if they don't, guess what? They could be held responsible too. So hats off to the officer who did the right thing. See, we don't dislike police officers. In fact, we like most police officers. We just don't like the bad ones. All right, let's talk about a little murder in paradise. Now, the husband charged with beating his newlywed bride to death on their honeymoon at a luxury Fijian hideaway, and who then used a kayak to flee to an island 1.2 miles away, insists that her death is a tragic accident, which obviously explains why he tried to escape the scene and didn't call the authorities. Of course, accidents happen. You must then paddle away. The Memphis pharmacist by the name of Christine Chen was found dead on July 9th at the secluded $3,500 a night Turtle Island Resort, where the 1980 Brooke Shields film Blue Lagoon was filmed. Chen and her husband, Bradley Robert Dawson, who she married in February, had only checked into the resort 2 days earlier. Chen was found bloodied on the bathroom floor of the couple's luxury bungalow. She had apparently suffered multiple traumatic injuries to her body and blunt force trauma to the head. She probably slipped, right? It was an accident. And he had to paddle to the other island 1.2 miles away to get help. Just saying. Maybe I'm getting a little cynical. Well, after Chen's body was discovered, Dawson was nowhere to be found. Like I said, a police manhunt located him 36 hours later on a different island that I'm not even going to try to pronounce. And he had told a local man that he had left the Turtle Island on a kayak in the dead of night after he and his wife got into a heated argument. Now, Dawson's lawyer, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Khan, has stated that his client was too distraught to talk for days after he was charged with Chen's murder. And something surprising happened, Khan has reported. And Bradley's okay now, but he was really distressed when it all happened. And last week he was in a desperate condition, but he's picking it up now. It's a horrendous thing to happen on your honeymoon. I'm sure he was shocked, probably suicidal. Now he's coming out of it. And he's going to fight it because it was an accident. That's why he had to paddle away 1.2 miles to get for help. Now, the couple was originally from Memphis, Tennessee, where they were staying in the five-star resort, which has just 14 villas across the small island. Now, they married back in February but delayed their dream trip until July. Only resort staff live on the remote tropical island, which is 350 kilometers northwest of Fiji's capital, Suva, which has restricted details about the tragedy being released, because we can't have Fiji as like a honeymoon murder capital of the world. Don't want that. But local officials have said allegedly fought on the day of Dawson's death, adding that there was apparently some sort of heated argument. Resort staff said only that there was an incident, which was a private matter for the couple. Fijian police refused to comment on the case as well. Now, Mr. Dawson is now being held in a cell on the Fijian mainland awaiting a bail hearing next week, but his lawyer vehemently denies his client is a murderer. The defense has yet to see the full police case against his client, and the postmortem results reveal a cause of death, but he's convinced the murder charge will in fact be thrown out. There is no way that he can be convicted. No way. Full stop, Mr. Khan said. On the evidence that they have presented so far, there's no proof of the charge of murder with the intent to kill anyone with premeditation. On the face of it, it looks like an accident, but I will be able to confirm that once I get the full disclosure next week and get it in front of other witnesses. Dawson's mother has been in constant touch with the lawyer since her son's arrest, but has not yet flown to Fiji. The attorney stated that he's in touch with the mother, and all his family and friends are devastated because he was a very nice, quiet fellow. He's never been involved with the law before. This is something completely new. Now, on the day Chen was found dead, the alarm was raised when neither Chen nor Dawson turned up to eat breakfast. Their personal butler then went to the couple's bungalow and found a do not disturb sign on the door. Then they failed to turn up for lunch, and at that point, their butler, who personally cleaned their bungalow, used the spare key to unlock the door. The butler, known as House Papa, discovered Chen lying bloodied on the bathroom floor about midday. Sources have also stated that the 50-year-old had started cleaning other rooms in the bungalow before he saw bloodstains on the bathroom wall, and when he went to investigate, he found Chen beaten to death. He then alerted hotel management, who called the police in the nearby city, just under an hour from the international airport. At the same time, officers recovered Chen's body. They also sent a team to search for Dawson, who was nowhere to be found. As stated, he was found at this island, and if you could pronounce it, Matakawalaluve, Matacawaleeve Island, 1.2 miles across the water from Turtle Island, about 3 p.m. the next day. Apparently, Dawson used the kayak to paddle to the island between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. on Saturday morning after the fight, but then he landed on the secluded beach and didn't know what he was going to do after that. When they discovered Dawson, he was bruised and bleeding from his palms and his feet, injuries that may have been caused from the falling onto the nearby coral. Apparently, he at first kept refusing food and water, insisted he was okay, but people insisted that he should eat or drink something, and then the police were called, and by the time the police got there, he was drunk. He didn't tell us he had killed his wife. He didn't tell the people that tried to help him that he had killed his wife, but they could smell alcohol on him, and he continued to repeat that he had a fight and offered no start or end to the story, just kept saying, "We had a fight." Now, a team of three police officers soon arrived at the island to take Dawson back to the Turtle Island and then to Fiji's main island, where he's charged with murder. Representatives of the Turtle Island Resort confirmed the incident in a statement, and we can confirm that an incident took place between a couple at the island on July 9th, which has resulted in a tragic outcome, and charges are being filed. We cooperate fully with the police, who conducted a thorough investigation and have now left the island, which is basically saying, we did nothing wrong, please don't sue us. Out of respect for those impacted, and given that it is an open legal matter, we cannot provide any further comment. We are deeply saddened by the event and send our sincere condolences to Ms. Chen's family and friends. Now, Mr. Dawson appeared before a magistrate this week, and he will appear before a magistrate again next week, where he will find out his formal charges, and the charges will be transferred to the High Court in Fiji. Mr. Dawson is set to appear back in court on July 27th. Next on the docket, Disney gone wild. That's right. We're not talking Disney. I know things are getting a little weird down there at Disney these days, but at least the people that are going to Disney are still keeping it classy for the kids, setting a good example for everybody. That's right. Check this out. This little massive brawl erupted at the Disney World's Magic Kingdom this week and resulted in two arrests and bans from the theme parks from several alleged participants. The wild fracas among at least 10 people erupted outside Mickey's Philharmonic Magic Theater at the Orlando, Florida theme park on Thursday after two families got into an argument while waiting in line, sparking a tangle of fisticuffs that landed at least one man in the hospital. One of the alleged participants, who was hauled off in an ambulance and hospitalized due to a large cut on his chin, confirmed the clampdown in a written message to Disney's blog. News Today, we got banned from Disney forever unless we contact the head. The alleged participant wrote, two people from the other party got arrested and the rest left. No one from our fam was arrested yet and they still have us here. The guest claimed that his family had been banned from the Magic Kingdom as well as other Disney properties, including their hotel. Meanwhile, two members of the other first throwing family, all of whom had been dressed identically in red shorts and white Disney-themed t-shirts, were arrested. They're making us leave our resort, which is Riviera, even though we are here for another 2 weeks. Who could spend 2 weeks at Disney? My God. Well, the guests lamented in the message, we have to leave the property, including Typhoon Lagoon and Disney Springs. The nasty fight was caught on camera by witnesses who posted the fracas on social media. And according to reports, the saga kicked off after one of the family members left the line to retrieve a phone. When she tried to rejoin her group, the other family, all dressed identically in red shorts and t-shirts, tried to block her from regaining her spot. Now, Walt Disney World reported that the two families confront each other at the theater's exit, with a member of the girl's family saying to the red short clan, we don't appreciate you guys pushing my younger sister. A shouting match ensued, with both groups hurling profanities and gradually stepping closer to each other, soon triggered an all-out fight that spilled onto the street outside the theater. Bystander video posted on social media captured children crying while panicked adults can be heard shouting for security and help. Eventually, the two groups were broken up by security and law enforcement, and the Disney blog reported that the Red Shorts family allegedly stole or broke several personal items belonging to their opponents, including mobile phones and designer clothes. What can you say, ladies and gentlemen? Keeping it classy at Disney, in front of the kids nonetheless. Okay, I haven't been to Disney since my kids were just little wee-high little children, and if I never go back there ever again, it will be too soon. I remember even buying the passes so you didn't have to stand in line. But you know what I remember? You still had to stand in line. And it was always hot and it was miserable. And you went in and you bought your kids a breakfast at the little resort one day. And I went in and bought two cartons of milk and two donuts for my kids. And the lady said, this will be like $35. And you're just like, there's a mistake. I got two donuts and two cartons of milk. And they said, yes, that's $35. And that was like 20 years ago, ladies and gentlemen. So I can only imagine what the price is now. It's probably something like $150. And I don't get adults to go to Disney World either. I just don't get it, okay? It just creeps me out a little bit. Maybe it's just because I do, but adults shouldn't be hanging out at amusement parks where kids predominantly go there. Just saying. And here, the other thing is, if I never go to a family reunion where we all wear the same clothes, my life will be complete, okay? I just don't get that either. Okay, all right, let's move on. I'm not sure why I'm so giddy today. Maybe it's just because it's Friday. Our dumb criminal of the day, let's talk about her. A 56-year-old woman was arrested after allegedly waving a pitchfork and black whip behind a grocery store, because that's normal. Now, according to the arrest affidavit, Lisa Sloan was attempting to sell teddy bears behind a public store. The store manager reportedly told the Florida Highway Patrol trooper that Ms. Sloan used a pitchfork to stab a minivan. And the affidavit alleges that at some point Sloan began yelling and running around with the pitchfork and a whip. Sloan was reportedly told to stop by the state troopers, but she refused the orders. Of course she did. She is running around with a pitchfork and a whip behind a Publix selling stuffed animals. I don't think she's going to listen to anybody, ladies and gentlemen. It ultimately turned out that Ms. Sloan appeared to be highly intoxicated and maybe perhaps on some sort of stimulant drug. Now, Ms. Sloan reportedly told authorities she felt no pain anymore and that God was in control. Sloan was eventually taken into custody, and while in the patrol car, she allegedly unbuckled her seatbelt and started kicking towards the window. She was obviously arrested and booked into the Lake County Jail on a $2,000 bond for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. A couple of things here. Yes, drugs along with some sort of unknown stimulant can make you somehow show up behind a Publix selling teddy bears with a whip and a pitchfork. Where would you even get those items? And it's even more concerning is did she have them just standing by and said, let's go sell the teddy bears? Well, Miss Sloan, you are a dumb criminal of the day. Congratulations. You've earned it. All right, before we go, I want to wish you all a great weekend. And check out this. More shirts have arrived. Look at that. Tell me that is not going to be a bestseller. It is. It's huge. They're selling like hotcakes. Go get one in the link below. You'll love it. So soft. You'll love it. All right. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.